You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
All right, everybody, it's a Lockdown Throwback edition of the David Sampson Show. David is kind enough to join us every week on Thursdays. He is the host of Nothing Personal with David Sampson. Make sure to check that out. Follow him on Twitter at David P. Sampson. David, there's a lot to get into with you right now. The MLB season has come to a close. The Marlins are a team searching for an identity, restarting with a manager. Who knows what's going on with ownership? I want to get into that, but let's get into what was grabbing a lot of people's attention yesterday on Twitter, and that was an interview done by Colin Cowherd with the star quarterback of the AFC champion Cincinnati Bengals, Joe Burrow, talking about concussions and not exactly doing the NFL any favors with what he said, David.
It's crazy. I just recorded Nothing Personal. It'll be out soon, maybe now, by the time you're listening to this. It's crazy because what he said was basically, hey, it's all part of the game. You can hurt your knee. You can hurt your elbow. You can get a concussion. Hey, I've not remembered halves, he said. I've not remembered full games, he said. But you know what? It's all good. We get paid handsomely. And anyway, and here's the kicker, pun intended, it's not long lasting. The guy's 25 years old talking to us that concussions aren't long lasting when there's a $1 billion settlement for the very, very thing that he's saying doesn't exist, proving that it does exist, that not only are they long lasting, but they're life changing and sometimes life ending.
Yeah, I didn't really get the final part of that because he was giving voice to all the Benin Amalu concerns, all the Chris Nowinski concerns, and then just applied nonsensical science at the very end. But this is a problem for Roger Goodell. And the NFLPA, I think, has been very very smart with their rhetoric in their press releases. They hold a share of the responsibility here with regards to the concussion protocols. They exercise their right to fire the independent neurologist. But they're projecting all of this onto the NFL, and given the NFL's history, maybe they're wise to not play that game out in the media with some of their statements, and they're just kind of falling on the sword here. What do you make of that that dance being played out in the media between the NFLPA and the NFL with regards to head trauma?
So this is page 4 of the union playbook when it comes to relationships with management. So in baseball, the example is there's 3 arbitrators who hear a case in arbitration, which is how you decide what a player makes in years 3 through 6 of their career. And did you know that both the commissioner's office and the union, if they don't like a decision by an arbitrator, by a panel, they can fire those arbitrators. And believe me, it's a great gig. These arbitrators go to Tampa, or they go to Arizona during cold weather season, not in Tampa, Arizona. And they get to meet players and they get to decide cases. They're well-known arbitrators, huge hourly rates, and boom, they can just get fired if they do not pay attention to the possession arrow. Possession arrow in baseball is what it sounds like in college basketball. When the teams have won 3 arbitration cases in a row, the next arbitration case is going to be won by the player no matter what, because arbitrators don't want to upset one side or the other because they don't want to get fired. And we're okay with that. What's going on here with the independent doctor is they're blaming. It would be like me blaming an arbitrator for a bad decision or for not believing my side of an arbitration case and ruling against me and then telling the commissioner, hey, get rid of that guy. Blaming the independent doctor, which is what the union is going out there publicly and saying, hey, listen, this independent doctor said Tua was ready to go. That was a bunch of horse hockey. He didn't follow the protocols correctly. He didn't make the right decision. We're going to exercise our right to show that we take care of the players, and we're going to fire him. Are you kidding me? Come on, Mike. What a fugazi.
But at the same time, though, David, there is a bigger problem here, and that is that the concussion issue is resurfacing off the back of this Tua thing, and I wonder if labor versus the league is always the context through which we have to view all of these things. Do these two entities not have to get together and say, well, we have a problem here. We're getting back to a period where we were 5 or 6 years ago, where concussions ruled the headlines and there was a major Hollywood movie made about it and the future of the sport was at peril. And they have to figure out a way to solve the problem of players openly admitting that they've played full games with concussions, that they have multiple brain injuries. I mean, on the basis of what Joe Burrow said, he's headed towards a career path of a minimum of a dozen head injuries. Do they not have to get put their heads together and for a moment stop being adversarial and start trying to solve a problem?
That's called PR. So I think that the PR may have been working the last couple of years if you're saying that it's now resurfacing. I think the exact word you used, Woody, is resurfacing, right? Did you say that the concussion issue
did,
is
yes.
resurfacing?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not resurfacing. It hasn't gone anywhere. There's actually no change. The difference was there was this big settlement. Then they had bad PR because they weren't putting the settlement monies into the right hands because of race. Remember that whole thing that we covered on this show for sure. Then it bubbled down. It's all been about PR. What's bubbling up now is a great quarterback named Tua in a great market with a great team, one of the all-time great teams in football, Miami. He all of a sudden is on camera spasming. That's PR. There's nothing different going on. So the league and the union never work together on PR. They always do their own statements. They always believe that their view of PR is the right one. We've tried so many times with the players union to do joint statements, even when it comes to like hurricane relief, and it's hard to get together on that. Forget concussions. So the real issue that football has is they've got a PR problem and they've got to figure out how to deal with it. And the rule number one when you have a PR problem is you try to squash it. You try to not give it legs so it doesn't last. And you try to control messaging from those who are speaking. And in this day and age with social media, it's really, really hard to control the way it used to be, which is why you see so many PR problems in sports.
Now, David, I was sort of heading somewhere by talking about the players versus league/ownership line of questioning. And that was what's going on with the NWSL right now, which is the U.S. Soccer hired the former acting attorney general, Sally Yates, to basically investigate the entire culture of women's soccer. They run the NWSL and found a ton of issues that were unreported, issues of a sexual variety, sexual assault, sexual coercing that led to some really traumatic instances for players and really bad work environments. And I sort of heard a lot of, you know, what the NWSL commissioners have done, what the organizations have done. And it just always seems like whenever a player comes to the team or comes to the league and says, there is a problem here, that's always due to the context of, well, labor negotiations. Well, if we give the players this, then we have to acknowledge that our institution is failing. And there's never an acknowledgement that maybe we need to completely tear down our organization to the studs because there's a huge cultural problem within our organization. And it's always because it comes down to, well, if we give that, then we're giving an inch in negotiations with our players. And that leads to overall institutional failure. How do you think organizations can be better about that so that things like the NWSL don't happen, so that the NFL actually cares about concussion among their players? Because it just always seems like, and you've talked about this before as it relates to baseball issues, that it's always viewed through the context of, well, if we're giving, then we have to take. It's a push and a pull. It can't just be a push.
Shouldn't there be some issues that have nothing to do with labor? Shouldn't there be some issues where it's just a difference between right and wrong, where everybody agrees what's right and everybody knows what's wrong? Wouldn't that be a great world? Well, that's not the world we live in. That's not the business world of sports. You forgot to mention what happened in hockey. I did a segment on the Women's Soccer League that I want to get to, but let's first go back to hockey with the abuse that took place. Remember when the actual hockey player, professional hockey player, and what Gary Bettman did to try to get that story done with as quickly as possible. And they say the same thing always. We want to make it a safe environment for hockey players from when they're kids up until when they're adults. Go back to Larry Nassar and gymnastics. They say the same thing, PR 101. We want to make it a safe environment for gymnasts, no matter whether they're 7 years old or 25 years old. That is what you do because that is what the PR crisis communicators tell you to say. And that's what happened in the NWSL. where there was what was going on was unthinkable. Absolutely disgraceful and disgusting. A show not just of misogyny. This is not of just harassment. This was straight up abuse that was happening. And the players in that league came out and said in a statement just a couple days ago, it's not that the owners should be just held responsible. The owners should not be owners. We can't allow them anywhere near our sport if there's ever going to be a recovery. They're trying a different approach in the NWSL that in hockey they didn't try, that in gymnastics they didn't try, that in baseball they don't try, football for sure they don't. And that is players trying to do a hostile takeover of owners. Now, you could argue the NBA just did it with Robert Sarver by having players speak out, and then Robert Sarver was forced to sell. That could be the beginning, and that'd be very interesting if that continues to happen. And what you're seeing in the NWSL is more executives are resigning. However, as they resign, as they're being pushed out, they're saying things like, hey, we did our best. We didn't know for sure. We heard what you were saying, but we didn't follow up the proper way. It is such a disgrace, but it's not getting the right attention because it's not the NBA or the NFL. Even the NHL couldn't get the proper attention for this disgraceful behavior. But when you're dealing with an issue like this, it shouldn't be about labor. We don't make it about the relationship between labor and management because this goes to something far different than money. But the way these leagues treat it, they treat it as a PR problem.
Agreed. And I think when you look into what happened there, so the main incident that was featured in an ESPN documentary that aired earlier this week was a couple of players for the Portland Thorns had an issue with their coach, who eventually went on to be incredibly successful in North Carolina and got a recommendation after basically engaging in sexual relations with a couple of his players. And then, you know, it was found out by the club. They investigated it. They fired him. But then the general manager recommended the coach to the next team he went on to coach. It was then Western New York, now North Carolina. And that led to the completely opening up of investigations into multiple teams, into abusive relationships. And the thing that was most heartbreaking was that the two players from Portland did report it to HR. HR did nothing. They then went to the league. The league did nothing. They then, after the incident had already gone several years later, they went back to the newest NWSL commissioner, who then said, if we're ever around each other at some point, maybe we can grab coffee and discuss this. Never an attempt to actually investigate the issue. Never an attempt to actually solve the environment there. And that's why I'm sort of really annoyed by how these institutions are first about protecting themselves and not actually creating safe environments.
Chris, were you born yesterday? Did you fall off the turnip truck?
No.
I don't even understand what you're saying to me right now.
But there is an example. It's an extreme one. But to me, it is sort of reminiscent of the Catholic Church and everything that happened in that environment. And ultimately, the first instinct of everyone there was to protect themselves and protect the institution and maintain the credibility of the institution.
Just ask it a separate way, Chris. Maybe we can put this into the show. What are you talking about?
What I'm talking about
is every institution does this. Everybody is out to protect themselves at every step of the way. You think it doesn't happen internally in your office? Politically, when stuff's going on, you protect yourself at all costs. You think the sports leagues care when the players are being either underpaid or abused or not treated well, or not given enough money to live, or they're not flying on good enough planes?
All I'm saying is I would like them to, David. I would like them to.
I'm sorry. Thank you. I missed your point. You'd like them to.
I would like them to. Yeah. And I think
I don't understand why you're being so dismissive of Witte's utopian hopes.
I don't even think it's utopian. I think anyone would want to work in an environment in which, I'm not going to be sexually abused, and then the first instinct of my boss is to cover it up. And that's exactly what happened here.
But by the way, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice? When is the last time? I'd like to be able to not worry about being shot or mugged. Wouldn't that be amazing?
If the government went in and said we want to try and fix this, we want to pass gun carry laws and we want to have background checks, I wouldn't go, I might get shot, so what's the point in even trying? There's always a point in trying. There's always a point. And you mentioned the NWSL players with an uprising. They have by far the bigger political favor amongst their supporters and amongst their customers. They also have an enormous amount of power because the players are bigger than the league. There have been multiple attempts at women's soccer leagues that have come and gone. The players are always massive figures. Megan Rapinoe and Alex Morgan and all the U.S. women's national team stars are bigger than the league. They can go play in Europe. The NWSL has to fix this problem of their institution, and the players have an enormous amount of power.
Or they'll fold.
Will they fold?
I mean, they've shown in this country several times over that professional women's soccer leagues can fold.
But by the way, I'm not rooting for that. I'm not rooting for that whatsoever. I just think that the NWSL, which, by the way, there is a vote in Chicago, I believe their board of directors is throwing off the majority owner from being on the board. They have genuine institutional issues, and I think at some point, sports leagues have to stop thinking about just surviving, just protecting themselves, and start thinking about an environment, particularly in this arena, in which they solve this problem.
So this is the third rail one, right? The abuse, the sexual relations with the players. Are we drawing the line there? Do we add racism to it?
Of course.
Right? Sexism?
Yeah.
I agree. Abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse. What about mental abuse? Should we add that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Workplace environment.
Okay. Stuff. Workplace environment in general should be there. Mm-hmm. What about lack of performance?
No, not at all.
No, not a big deal. That's just part of the game, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. I'm totally with you. The odds of that happening in any of the big leagues, do you see what it took for Robert Sarver to have to sell the Suns? It had been years and years and a botched investigation, not botched, it was a purposeful investigation that found what it found. You think concussions are brand new in football?
This is one of those times that I think your cynicism is probably getting in the way of your message.
My message is very clear. The behavior that goes on is so inexcusable that those people should never forget, be allowed. The players want them never to be owners.
I want them
to not be free.
There we go.
I'd like them to be in jail.
That's the note we're trying to strike. There we go. All right,
That's obvious. But I also want to make it clear.
Well, I think sometimes
they're not going to jail. They should.
Okay, there we go. I think sometimes where your cynicism gets in the way of it is like you expect the audience to follow your logic, which is that doesn't even have to be said. It doesn't have to be stated. And I think when you apply so much cynicism, maybe it does in your case because people think...
We've talked about this, Mike, and that confuses me sometimes. And it's a blind spot for me because often I'll do a show, and when you do a 45-minute show every day where there is no talk back, where you're just doing it to a camera,
yeah,
it tends to actually make that blind spot bigger, not smaller.
Oh, it reinforces bad habits, no doubt.
There's no question. So I believe that when I'm communicating something, that certain things don't need to be said because they should be obvious. And I appreciate when you point out that certain things do need to be said. These people, and I've talked about nothing personal, from the gymnasts, from Nasser, all the way up to hockey, to the women's soccer, to what goes on in the front offices with Danny Snyder and Mark Cuban, it is beyond reproach. The punishments are not enough. The fines are not enough. The suspensions are not enough. You should be able to work in an environment no matter what sex you are, no matter what color you are, and you should be judged on your ability to do the job, period. And that doesn't happen enough in this world, forget in sports.
All right, so we can aspire to be better. Let's take a pivot here and talk about what happened in Golden State, where two players, one a superstar, probably a future Hall of Famer, Draymond Green, gets into a physical altercation with Jordan Poole. Draymond Green, for all his new media stuff, is relying on his clutch management people to play a media game and slander Jordan Poole. I found that interesting. I generally find all of Draymond's new media stuff interesting because he's really hammering that home. And it's getting to the point where it's like, if I walk onto a basketball court and dribble a basketball, I don't say new basketball. What's with the new media? It's just media. We're all pulling the same rope here. And especially when you're going to play games like that and have your management go behind and work the actual media, maybe you shouldn't be touting new media so much if you're playing old media games, Draymond. But they get into
It's the truth though, Mike. He's telling the unvarnished truth
right.
that we don't get to because we're just dopes in the media that just report what people tell us and what people tell us is wrong. And so, you know, we're the ones who don't know anything. They know everything.
Yeah, they know everything and
they've got the inside.
They got the inside and they certainly don't have agendas and we can't do that. I'm telling you, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna go to a gym and just pick up a basketball and say, new basketball's here. It's arrived. And it dribbles with both hands. That's new basketball over here. How would you have handled this this physical altercation between players? And maybe it's a reality of the situation. Maybe it's handled differently if it's a end of the bench player. But Jordan Poole is, according to slanderous covert operations from Clutch Sports, entered training camp with a bad attitude because he's holding out for a big contract and whatnot. How do you handle this situation between two big-time contributors?
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much of what I said on today's Nothing Personal, but I want to give some highlights that I think I'd like to hear your reaction to. The first step is that you meet with both Draymond Green and Jordan Poole separately. Then you meet with them together. Then you have a team meeting. You cannot let something like this fester. I want players policing themselves. That's number one. It is way more effective in the clubhouse, in the locker room, when there are players who are in charge. However, I got to draw the line when there's a chance of injury. Because the one thing I cannot have is players injuring themselves or each other. Just can't have it. Terrible waste. What Draymond Green was trying to say and what he is saying is that if we are going to be fat and happy, we're not going to be the dynasty that we believe we are and should be. And if this dynasty is going to be continuing, it's going to get new people leading the way. Jordan Poole, you are going to be leading the new type of dynasty. Here's how we do it. Here's how we prepare. Here's how we go into spring training or preseason. But there are ways to do that that don't involve fisticuffs. And I wish that Draymond, who's so into new media, who's so into using his mouth, isn't it a better lesson for people to use your mouth instead of your fists? To try to explain to him how to be better instead of knocking his socks off? I just don't understand how Draymond can say he's this great communicator and then uses his hand to communicate.
Moreover, use that microphone to advance your agenda. I mean, Eric, give me that insight. Give me that.
Bring him on the show.
That truth.
Why can't Jordan Poole go on the show and you call him out and say, listen, Jordan, come on the show. There are going to be a lot of listeners and we're going to talk about what's upsetting me and what we need to do in order to be good again this year and defend our title.
But if this report came out from a traditional media source, say Ethan Strauss has a whole write-up on this altercation and the building tensions inside that Warriors locker room, it'll just get refuted and, oh, that's old traditional media and they're lying and this is where the real truth is. And it really takes a discerning public, I think. And unfortunately, I think most people understand people's agendas involved, but there is such a cult of personality around athletes and Draymond in general that he just bought so much capital with his fan base that his truth is going to be the truth. And I mean, that's not necessarily new media. That's more propaganda.
Propaganda is what everybody's done. It was way easier before social media to engage in propaganda from the team standpoint. It's what we did.
Oh, I actually think it's way easier to engage in propaganda now because you have echo chambers.
So I'm going to push back on that and say,
no, I'm not. I think I'll just mention the election and where we are with just basic facts. I think it's so much easier now to weaponize social media and propagandize. It is so much now that shame is out the window. It is so much easier to propagandize.
But that's just preaching to the choir, right? There's fact checking that goes on. So
no, not if you don't give a shit about the facts. Boom.
No, everybody cares about the facts when the facts are what you want them to be and not being displayed that way.
Well, all right, let's take an example. Herschel Walker, who claimed that everything was a lie. He didn't even know his accuser. And the facts come out that the accuser is actually a mother to one of his children.
Mm-hmm.
That would seem to poke holes in that, but they're holding the line. And this is all just a big takeout from the left. And they'll stoop to anything to make sure that we don't win this seat. Everything's a lie.
Well, the woman came out and said it. I forgot her name, Dana somebody, who just said, listen, I don't care what Herschel Walker does or doesn't do. I don't care his position, if he wants to kill baby eagles or kill babies or whatever he wants to do. I don't want to lose control of the Senate, right? I want control of the Senate. We have to get a Republican in that seat. And I give her credit for honesty. When you put Herschel Walker as a Senate candidate, which is, it's beyond comprehension. That to me is the bigger issue, not being red or blue. It's not having your best people represent you. And that's our biggest problem. That's who it was, Jeremy, right? It was Dana Loesch. For me, it is just shocking that we have candidates like Herschel Walker running. It's embarrassing. We saw it in Florida so often when I was down there, the kind of people who run. I just don't get it. You people don't realize the power these politicians have. And nobody wants to run who's smart, because they know that they're going to get examined and the skeletons in the closet and all the bad stuff. They're going to have to go around raising money like Francis Suarez, running around raising money all the time. And you're not really governing. So the smartest people don't want to be a part of it. And that's the most depressing part.
I think when you look at the political spectrum right now, I don't think the left really has an answer for the shamelessness that some on the right do. The Herschel Walker
play the game.
No, well, it's just,
it's also antithetical to their political platform and their sort of like their whole idea of governance. Right, they actually care about this stuff.
Right, but the right will just double down. It's political ad season, and it's infuriating. Everything is a radical left and want to defund the police. I saw an attack ad that says this one candidate doesn't care about the police, wants to defund it, and then I see the other candidate's ad, and she's actually a cop.
Yeah,
so, like it's
that's Val Demings here in Florida.
Yeah,
he's running against Marco Rubio.
I mean, Herschel Walker fits an archetype of, where have we seen celebrity that isn't governed by shame running for office? All right, so it literally reached the highest levels in this country, and now you have Herschel Walker and you have Dr. Oz, and anything that is investigated and backed up by eyewitness accounts from victims in some cases, it doesn't matter. It's all a lie. Go Team Red.
It's all politically motivated.
And it's just the dumbest. It's the dumbest thing on the planet right now. And it has been cemented by things like social media, because people just want to hear their own beliefs reinforced.
All I ask is that people are educated, and we're doing a project with Nothing Personal, hiring someone where there's going to be a database that you can go to see who's running, where you are, how you register to vote, learn where the campaign contributions are coming from. My whole point has been from the beginning, through this craziness that's happened, not just over the last 6 years, it's been going on for a long time. I just want people to know who they're voting for. And once the people speak, the people speak. I can't argue against if you are on the right or on the left. That is totally your choice. But at least know what you're choosing. And that is something that has gone away. And you'd think with social media, it would be easier to understand who you're voting for. But the voter turnout rates are pathetically low. The knowledge that people have about real issues that actually impact them is pathetically low. And people are more interested in who's fathering who, which child's a bastard, who abused who, what, when, where, who's having the affair, who's got the biggest social media following. It's insane to me. It's as though these people don't get it. Trump said something interesting, love him or hate him. He said at one point, and I think it was Trump, or maybe it was Michael Douglas playing the American president. It was one of the two, I can't remember who, said that people will need to drink water. I think it was the American president. When they're thirsty, they'll go through sand and they'll drink the sand because you told them it was water.
Michael Douglas may not have been Trump.
That may have been American president.
That was American president.
I would not compare those two figures.
You had me though with how you stumbled through it. I was like, is this Trump?
And that was a Democrat, by the way.
That was a Democrat. And it's pretty prescient, isn't it? That all these years later, that really what politicians are doing is they are somehow making people believe that they are getting what they want. And those people don't even understand what they're getting. It is such a sad display of current governance.
Rob Reiner.
David, if I may get back to how we got here, the Draymond issue. You mentioned how you're okay with locker rooms policing themselves. I think Draymond Green has a ton of latitude as sort of the minister of culture with the Golden State Warriors and having set the foundation for that team for a decade now. But it has also become fairly clear that he can have it go a bit too far. And you can make an argument that maybe he ran off Kevin Durant. You can make an argument that he probably has a temper that goes too far and yells at people.
What are you talking about? They did a podcast together. That was all made up.
It right,
was, there
exactly.
was no tension between the right. two. He didn't run anybody
New
off.
Media.
It was media. Yeah, that was old
Draymond
media.
Draymond gets ejected from playoff games, right?
Right.
Very old media attitudes going on right now.
He's, you know, picks up technical points and all that. Is there a point at which that goes too far, where the players policing themselves goes too far? Because I feel like Draymond Green has sort of had the latitude to do whatever it is that he wishes in that organization. And I wonder if he's almost accrued too much power to sort of, hey, Jordan Poole, stay in your lane. Know your role. Just because you're about to get a big extension, calm down. I'm in charge here. Like, I've always wondered how an organization would handle a character who also seems to be motivated by that. He's motivated by holding cultures intact and being aggressive and overly and overstepping the bounds.
It's
and I
good
would say
for his brand.
I would say probably having anger issues at times.
Owners and presidents and GMs are Frankenstein. And we spend our days creating monsters all day. And we then are surprised when the monsters want to eat us and everything in their way. Draymond Green was created by the Golden State Warriors. And now they want to come out and say, hey, just don't punch anyone, but keep leading the clubhouse. There are examples and examples of players whose heads have gotten so large because we never say no. They're able to get anything they want. They're able to have exceptions made. It's why we've talked about, do you treat superstars differently than other players? And often you have to. You have no choice. Skipper and I talked about that on a recent show. The problem is when it goes too far, there's nothing you can do. When I've lost Christian Yelich because we created him and he's now a monster, what do I do? Do I try to take it back? It doesn't work. You cannot de-monster a monster without putting him down. And the way you put him down is through trade or release. And Draymond Green is not a trade or release candidate no matter what he does, because at the end of the day, they want to win. And you have a better chance of winning in basketball with Draymond Green than without. When it comes to a player like Yelich, Derek Jeter said, you don't want to be here. You're a monster that was created by the previous regime. We'll get rid of you because we think we'll be better without you. And clearly that was not the case.
There's a lot of stories I wish I had time to get into with David Samson, but Winnie and I are going to geek out over local soccer for a couple of minutes to wrap up this local hour. So if you want to hear David's takes on stuff like LeBron James and owning a Vegas team, or what's going on in MLB, make sure to check out Nothing Personal with David Samson. Every week, David reviews a TV show, a documentary, a movie, whatever his heart desires. What is your review for this week?
I watched a movie called Emily the Criminal, and I don't know whether you guys have spoken about it before. Ooh, I admit I have not.
Is that the Aubrey Plaza movie?
I've heard that Aubrey Plaza is having a moment.
She is having a moment.
Is this a thing, you know, Aubrey having a moment?
You know who she reminds me of? She reminds me of Billy a little bit.
Allison used to say that.
That Aubrey's having a moment?
No, that Aubrey reminds her of Billy.
Aubrey of Billy Gill?
Billy Gill, yeah.
And when she said that, I'm like, I can't go for that. No can do.
No, I can't go for that.
Wait, you're a Hall & Oates fan?
Are you wearing a Hall & Oates shirt?
I love Hall & Oates.
I've known you for 10 years.
They're number one.
I've known you for 10 years, and not once have you mentioned Hall & Oates.
I listen to Hall & Oates almost every day.
They're
on every playlist I have. My run playlist, my relax playlist, my sleep playlist, my flight playlist, every one. I believe, and you can check this, and I think it's still true, they're the top-selling duo of all time.
Let's get to your review before I go further down the rabbit hole.
Okay, Emily the Criminal. Aubrey Plaza, if you've not heard of her, has been in some movies that are not well seen, like Safety Not Guaranteed, which are simply phenomenal. Black Bear, just movies that are, she's good. This time, she produces a movie that is pretty outside of the zone in terms of what happens to this person who starts off as a person who needs money and then ends up being a criminal. So that seems like an old story, right? But the way Aubrey Plaza plays it, the camera is always up close and personal with her. You are engaged with her in a very intimate way. It's not a sexual way. It's an intimate way where you are seeing what's in her brain. Like, I feel like you're seeing the cranks, like the movie Inside Out. You're seeing the decisions that are being made. You're seeing how you go down the rabbit hole into criminality and what happens. And it is a staggering performance, probably her best performance of the career, a movie that could get attention come Oscar time. I don't know that she'll get nominated because there's so many great performances for women this year. But what I will say is it is worth your time.
Would you say
Emily the Criminal?
Would you say that Aubrey Plaza is indeed having a moment?
No. I'll tell you why. David. Having a moment to me, and maybe I'm just not doing the bit with you. Having a moment is, hey, this is like she hasn't been anything and now she's something and she won't be something soon. So this is a moment. Is that what you mean by a moment?
I think, yeah, like Steve Carell was always something, but then he had a moment and he became something bigger. And I think
but
that's what's happening with Aubrey.
Way.
Yeah, Steve Carell's a big star, I think.
Steve Carell is one of the biggest. Yeah. Are you watching The Patient right now?
I want to, but
it's
I haven't
amazing.
Gotten around
He's
to it.
He's showing his range. He's showing his range. The reason Aubrey Plaza is not having a moment is because, remember Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates?
Yeah, she was in it.
When you can do that and Emily the Criminal, it's not a moment. That's called a career. Aubrey Plaza is having a career, not a moment.
Wow, we got down to the bottom of it. Thank you so much, David. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Whether you hydrate to live or live to hydrate, Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink plus eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness, all in a single sugar-free stick. Are you heading to the airport on a long flight? Or do you need something after your flag football game? Well, if I was you, I would definitely go with Liquid IV just for the electrolytes so you don't feel run down. And I know for me, Liquid IV helps me start my day in the morning, and it helps give me the energy to do stuff like cut my yard and wash my car and work out and just face the day. And you can get your energy back while drinking something that's delicious. And when I say delicious, you can pick from flavors like pear, white peach, green grape, lemon lime, and more. Liquid IV is non-GMO, free from gluten, dairy, and soy. However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code DAN at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration using code DAN today at liquidiv.com.
Dan Le Batard.
I mean, they used to call me Chris Karaoke.
Stugatz.
That back row is bringing it today.
This is the Dan Lebatard Show with the Stugatz.
Stugatz has come in swaggering because he says we have a weekend, Dan. I don't know what it means. I think just what are you talking about? A lot of sports on television? Or?
We have a weekend. We have Dolphins and Jets. We have great NFL games. We have de facto college football playoff games. Major League Baseball playoff games start on Friday. Four games on Friday. The soccer playoffs. What?
Decision day on Sunday.
Oh, massive.
Oh, great job by MLS to put their most important day of the season right up against the 1 o'clock kickoffs in the NFL. Just a stroke of genius on their part.
Against the witching hour.
I don't ever understand the MLS broadcasting strategy, but guys, I want to talk about Inter Miami some because we don't talk a lot of Inter Miami on this show, even though I'm a season ticket holder. Chris Whittingham is a broadcaster for the team. Anytime we've talked about Inter Miami, it's either been stadium talk or just laughing at what's been a pretty relatively embarrassing launch for what was supposed to be a glamour franchise with David Beckham.
Not a lot of positives, not a lot of reasons to talk about the fledgling franchise that came with Beckham and sparkles and everything else. There's been very little positive we've been able to say since Beckham came into town.
And this season it was looking like more of the same. More struggles out the gate. You wondered if they hired the right manager. You certainly wondered if they made the right signings. And then something happened. Gonzalo Higuain lost about 30 pounds.
You've been making fun of him, and that name is magical. You've been making fun of that guy who's got my father's name, Gonzalo, and how fat he was and washed and out of shape, and now he's great.
Witty.
Incredible.
Witty, correct me if I'm wrong. He had an actual quote was, I just approached this league like I could just stroll in and play with a cigarette in my mouth.
Yeah.
And it showed last year. It showed. He was booed by his home fans.
My kind of guy.
He was booed by his home fans. He looked slow. He looked out of shape. And it was widely expected that this would be his final season under contract, and you were just dying to get him off the books. And now, in a few short months, he's gone from a laughingstock to certifiably the greatest player in this franchise's history.
Oh, my God.
Someone that is having a sold-out stadium sing his name.
You're telling me that a guy, a faded legend, you're telling me I have only checked in with this person to mock that he's a roly-poly washed version of himself who once was great but came to play the last year here the way that a bunch of old guys used to play for the Cosmos in the 70s.
Their history is three seasons. I mean,
Mike Ryan has done nothing but use that name as a punchline for a couple of years now.
He spat that name, and it was for two full calendar years. He arrived in the summer of 2020, and until about June of this year, he has mostly been a player that the fans have not been a fan of. And all of a sudden, now, last night, the coach basically came out and said that Gonzalo Higuain decided to retire midway through the season, around the time that he was struggling the most. And from that moment, he's like, all right, F it. Let's make this fun. And all of a sudden, in the last 15 games, he has scored 14 goals for Inter Miami.
Wow.
Two more in a 4-1 victory over Orlando City, their in-state rivals last night, to secure a playoff place. They're a win and a loss from another team away from hosting a playoff game, which would have been unthinkable when they took 1 point from their first five
in-state
games of the
rival,
season.
In-state rival, is that a real thing?
Yeah.
In-state
rival. Orlando City. There was fuck some Orlando chance last night in that packed house, and it was... I gotta say, it's pretty emotional. As a season ticket holder from the very first moment I could actually get those season tickets, especially earlier this season, there were some sad games to attend. It was not a good vibe. And to see...
And they betrayed you a little bit by playing the games. You thought you were going to get a Miami experience, and next thing you know, you're deep in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, well, the games were that the pandemic happened and the stadium pursuit of something closer to Miami has taken a lot longer than we all had anticipated, but all would have been forgiven. I love soccer. I am the key demo for this franchise. And yet they were doing everything that they could to shake me off the branch, but I held on. And last night, to see a packed stadium on a Wednesday night against, yes, I know it's a laughable thing for me to say, but an in-state rival, their fiercest rival in soccer that matters, to clinch a traditional playoff spot, because they made the playoffs in the first year, but that was
a play-in. It was an expanded field because of COVID. It was ridiculous.
For this team to have this turnaround with the very same guys that people would point at the TV and yell at, the manager, the personnel, Gonzalo Higuain, for all of them to turn it around this majestically and be entering into the playoffs. We'll see exactly what position. That'll get sorted on decision day, but you won't watch it because Jets Dolphins.
D-Day.
Yeah. To enter the playoffs, arguably in the best form of the conference in a league that really anybody can win it. It's arguably as random as Major League Baseball.
Oh, wait a minute.
Is.
Now you've got Stugatz's attention.
It's the most random sport in the country.
Now you've got Stugatz's. Stugatz's attention has been gotten here. What do you mean? Everyone's in the mix?
it's totally up for grabs. Go ahead and try to tell me with conviction that a certain MLS team is going to win the MLS.
You're going to tell me that there's a... You're going to tell me that from where we stand now, you've been betrayed a number of times, you get emotional with these teams, you get unreasonable. There's the possibility that after you've been doing nothing but making fun of Gonzalo Higuain and just the name is so beautiful as a fat guy who is just microwaving the last part of his career. You're telling me there's a chance that he all of a sudden becomes Erling Haaland and is scoring goals all over the place.
Ooh. Yeah, but here's what I'll say is we understand that this is a niche sport, and I'm not even talking about soccer. I'm talking about MLS soccer, because I think if we talk about clubs like Chelsea and Manchester United and Real Madrid, more people in our audience know what's going on there and what's going on in the domestic league here. We've been very cognizant of that. I'm not force feeding you Inter Miami talk. The last time we talked about this team was a half a year ago.
You're force feeding them Cesta Cyclone talk.
Yeah, well, and that's a really good team.
That's another champion.
That's a really good team.
South Florida.
Hey, have you been supporting the Cyclones on ESPN Plus? You can follow Arcesa Cyclones all year long on ESPN Plus in dazzling 720p.
I canceled my ESPN Plus subscription.
You did? And
you are not gambling again if you're doing that.
I'm using Whittingham's. I mean.
But on ESPN Plus nationally, if you want to follow Inter Miami, oftentimes you'll hear Chris Whittingham on that call. And this is, I really hope, this is the opportunity that this franchise has always wanted to captivate a local sports crowd.
Let's
I don't
get
think
behind
it can
the
do
team.
That.
Whittingham. Whittingham's an announcer for this team. Whittingham has been calling shitty soccer for a long time in this market. In closets at Imahina, like just guerrilla warfare soccer broadcasting. He's been keeping the sport alive through the wires of Hialeah. Just where have you been broadcasting from? Closets
from everywhere, from warehouses in Dania Beach to closets in Medley.
Phil Shane used to have this turf, but now it's yours. Is there anyone else?
Phil Shane's still on the Imahina turf.
He's still doing it?
He's still out there doing it. Call Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, it's still soccer. And I appreciate what Dan is doing, speaking for a large chunk of the audience. You're doing the writer's stuff. But if you allow Witty and I 2 minutes to fully geek out on tactics and how this turnaround came to be. Because we know Gonzalo Higuain lost about 30 pounds.
Yeah.
He's not the most fleet of foot, but he has found his goal-scoring form. But for me, the real revelation is what they've done defensively. From going to these games, their shape at times was unrecognizable. They were just an amorphous blob out there. Now they seem organized. That back four, led by DeAndre Yedlin, who's having a great year for this team. Higuain's a team MVP with what he's done. But Yedlin, supreme leadership, and what they found with their center back tandem, I think, has been a real revelation this season.
And Inter Miami had to do all of this despite the fact they had an arm tie behind their back because they're currently under sanctions from Major League Soccer for penalties involving a transfer. And so with $1.5 million less than the rest of the league, they had to build this team on a budget. They have a college draft pick at center back next to a journeyman who was last playing in Egypt. And so defensively, they've been sensational. They've won their last four games. And in terms of capturing the hearts and minds of South Florida, last night it was sort of a classic Inter-Miami scenario. In the first 2.5 years of this club, they play big games. The first time they open up the doors to the stadium, they lose. The first big home game where they had full capacity, they lost. There was sort of a set you up and disappoint, really for a long time. And last night, Mike and myself were both kind of ready for that again. They were without two key players. And it was a huge game, win and you're in against Orlando, in-state rivals, packed house, Wednesday night. We were all excited for it, and we thought they were going to lose again. And then they scored 38 seconds in, they won 4-1, and they actually sent a bunch of people home happy. And that's the thing that I've been disappointed by, is every time it's like, big moment, send the fans home happy, they haven't. And they were absolutely fired up. It was a great crowd, great excitement.
Why are you smiling so much?
He's so happy. They're so happy. I'm happy for them.
I mean, we care.
We got a weekend.
We care deeply about this thing.
And we want to bring people along. We want to bring people out to the games. And they've actually been very good at home this year. They've won 10 out of their last 13 at home.
I will say that this is the craziest season ticket holder experience I've ever had, because the flair for the dramatic that this team has in particular, there have been about 5 games that have been decided in the final minutes. Indiana Vasilev is a player that especially has a flair for the dramatic. It's been really fun, and to see the team actually build and improve and come together over the course of the year, be resilient, and really in the face of adversity, in the face of a lot of people laughing, the face of what was really embarrassing sanctions, arguably stemming from the worst signing in MLS history, they have turned this thing around and now potentially enter the MLS playoffs in the best form in the conference, in a sport that anything can happen in the
postseason. Could be playing at home.
They could be having a home playoff game.
It seems like they're gelling at the right time.
That is incredibly cliched analysis.
But accurate analysis as well.
What the crowd, tell me this, okay? Because I have...
here for you.
I have long desired. I mean, this town has tried to make soccer work a number of different times. I was just asking Whittingham yesterday about Thomas Rongen because he was on one of the channels here, and I'm like, it's a former striker, played in the 70s. Fort Lauderdale Strikers tried to make soccer work here a long time ago, and as we're terrible at March Madness and terrible at a lot of American sports in South Florida, we're good at this one. We consistently rally around, if you place it someplace, you get a lot of different factions who love this game. And so was the crowd, is it a crowd that is filled with flavor? Is it a crowd that is not, because we've got, our sports fans are kind of segregated here. The Panthers are off in Sawgrass, and that's a distinctly white experience. Is this something that is Dade County going to Broward County and making it a feel a bit Latin?
Massively. I don't think that there is a more Latin club in Major League Soccer by a long... Maybe... I think LAFC deserve a lot of credit for that. They have a tremendous supporters base, and there's a lot of Mexican influence, obviously, given the community that they reside in. But yeah, the supporters section, first off, there was not an empty seat in that stand last night. They're playing drums, they've got music going the entire time, they're leading chants in Spanish for the full
flares,
90 minutes.
Streamers.
Flares going off. It's a South American atmosphere, yeah, in that end of the ground. They're always there no matter what. Actually, their coolest moments are during lightning delays, when they basically put on a concert underneath their stand during the entire delay. And you're absolutely right. It is Miami coming north. I can't wait for when Miami actually plays in Miami, when they're building that stadium by the airport, because they'll be able to tap into that even more. But one of the best atmospheres in the league.
Oh, I've gone to their practices. They live this. It's year-round in Doral. You have a bunch of South Americans traveling up there. It's a hike. I mean, this stadium is far closer to Boca. It's 15 minutes away from the heart of Boca. And yet, fuck Orlando was the first English chant that I've heard from the supporters section all year long. In fact, last night, I don't know if this is a Hispanic Heritage Month thing, but all the in-stadium announcements were in Spanish. It is a distinctly Latin flavor if you can get past them playing Gloria Estefan so much.
And you keep saying the writer makes an appearance here, but you and Whittingham care about this sport uniquely. You've dedicated portions not of just your emotional fandom in this, you've dedicated time and energy and resources into becoming soccer voices. Like Whittingham has no more successful place that he exists than on soccer broadcasts.
Yeah, but yeah, we've certainly cut our teeth nationally, internationally, and in Europe with Chelsea Football Club. But this, nationally, most people still look at Inter Miami as a relatively new club. But this is a story that's been a decade long. And they've, every corner, they just run into a big fat L, whether it be getting this this franchise off the ground.
They never win.
They never win in all facets of it.
Mel Reese was a win for Mel Reese getting.
We'll see. And I'm still, because I have PTSD, I'm still not super hopeful. Like, I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop constantly with this franchise. But for one magical Wednesday night next to Fort Lauderdale Executive Airport, there was a packed house that was not let down by this franchise and was singing Gonzalo Higuain's name at the top of their lungs. And it was a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Do it in the postseason.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike. And typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right. You crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.